Welcome to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Christian Research Institute President Hank Hanegraaff. Our mission at CRI is not only to equip you with orthodox Christian doctrine, apologetic accuracy and discernment, but to help you become a faithful apprentice of Jesus Christ because life and truth matter. If you'd like to ask Hank a question, please call in now at 888-ASK-HANK. That's 888-275-4265. For more information about CRI and the Bible Answer Man broadcast, go to our website at equip.org. And now, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. All last month, we talked about a book entitled It's Dangerous to Believe by Mary Eberstadt, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies. This month, I want to talk to you about another book. It is available for those who support the ministry of the Christian Research Institute. It's titled Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. It's by Raymond Ibrahim, and it is available for those who support the ministry. You can check it out on the web at equip.org or simply write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And do remember, our resource consultants are standing by, 888-7000 and the letter CRI. Islam, I would say, is the only religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against what they call the infidel. And that graphic global reality makes Islam a religious ideology that espouses terrorism as a permanent policy, not just as a temporary expedient. And such is a historical reality from the early 7th century Medinan massacres, right on through the 21st century Manhattan massacre and so much more. The problem is there's a current narrative in vogue, and that is to tell it like it is tantamount to radicalizing Muslims, thus exacerbating hostilities that might otherwise lie dormant. And as such, we hear a common refrain. Islam, we're told in the West, is not our enemy. In fact, those were precisely the words that were spoken by Hillary Clinton in the wake of the Paris terrorist attacks. And President Barack Obama went even further when he said that he, in concert with Muslims around the world, share common principles. These are not my words, these are his. Principles of justice and progress, tolerance, and the dignity of all human beings. Not only so, said Obama, but throughout history, Islam has demonstrated through words and deeds the possibilities of religious tolerance and racial equality. And of course, Secretary of State John Kerry was even more emphatic when he said the real face of Islam is a peaceful religion based on the dignity of all human beings. And just in case someone might mistake his meaning, he proceeded to underscore his what he called a deep conviction that Muslim communities are advocating for universal human rights, for fundamental freedoms, including the most basic freedom to practice one's faith openly and freely. So the question is Islam really a peaceful and tolerant religion? In fact, is it even a religion at all, or is it an all-encompassing socio-political legal matrix that has bred a worldwide antagonism to anything but itself? Now, I've said this before, there might be millions of peaceful and tolerant Muslims, but this hardly means that Islam itself is a peaceful and tolerant religion. And to determine whether or not it is requires an objective, open-minded look at Islamic history. And that's precisely what Raymond Ibrahim does in Crucified Again, the book Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, The title Crucified Again, the subtitle once again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. And Raymond Ibrahim joins me on the broadcast. Welcome.
Hello, Hank. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's nice to have you on the broadcast. This is an alarming book on a lot of levels, because if you listen to the Obama administration, you hear over and over again this soaring rhetoric about Islam, its peaceful and tolerant tendencies. But what you don't hear is what's happening in the cradle of Christianity, where we have global genocide taking place, and seems like people in the West are completely oblivious to it.
Absolutely. That's what's going on right now, as you indicated. You know, of all the things, we are always accustomed to believing and accepting that politicians, presidents, and so forth exaggerate, dissemble, and lie. But when it comes to this question of Islam being a religion of peace, as Obama and so many others actually claim, there's no other lie, in my opinion, that is so unequivocally demonstrated false on an everyday basis. Because every day, if you follow what's going on in the Islamic world, especially what's happening to Christians, you will get an absolute counter to what they're saying. You're gonna, and what's important to me to relay to people, and they don't really get it, is that if you look at the entire Muslim world, it really spans a very large area. It spans, you know, three continents or more, actually, thanks to immigration. But the original Islamic world, if you look at it, you're going to find that Christians today, just as before, but we can talk about today real quickly, are being persecuted, not just, you know, violence and crime the way, you know, the politicians and Obama and the media try to rationalize it, but they're being persecuted in very specific patterns that are very evident in all these countries, even though all these countries, you have sub-Saharan black nations that are Muslim, you have, of course, Arab nations, you have Iran, Central Asia, you have Sinic East Asia, and you have Pakistan. So these are very different people. You have Turkey, different languages, different cultures, different races, ethnicities, socioeconomic, political circumstances, and yet you find the same exact patterns of persecution, which include bans on and the bombing of churches, which include attacking Christians because they're so-called blaspheming, which is basically saying anything that could be deemed critical of Islam and especially its prophet. It includes killing Muslims who want to convert to Christianity, and there's many of them. It includes the abduction, enslavement, rape of children and Christian females, and so forth. And so, to me, it's always been ironic. How do you explain these amazing and very similar patterns in areas that have absolutely nothing to do with each other except for one factor, which is Islam?
Let's take this back to the origins of Islam. And a couple years after Muhammad's death, you have Muslim hordes massacring multiplied thousands of Christians in Syria, very much like what's happening today. And then scarcely a year later, they massacre the monks in the monasteries of Mesopotamia. And then during the next 300 years, you have these Islamic imperialists succeeding in subjugating two-thirds of the Christian world, including Palestine, by the way, where Christ was born. Give us a little history, because from the time of Muhammad, the four rightly guided caliphs, then you have the caliphates, all the way through the abolishment of the caliphate by Kemal Ataturk in 1924. Give us some kind of a history of how Islam has behaved during its entire history.
Sure, and I'm very glad you bring this up, because I think this is very key. One of the problems here in the West and in America is history, where when it comes to Islam, has been completely, if not expunged, whitewashed. And so you ask your average American, when do conflicts start between Islam and Christendom, and they always invariably go to the Crusades. In fact, they started 400 years earlier, thanks to the Islamic world. And so, as you pointed out, if you look at the primary sources, and unfortunately, again, most Americans, most even reputable universities, when they teach early Islam or the life of Muhammad and so forth, they actually use secondary historical sources written by the likes of, I don't know if you're familiar with her, people like Karen Armstrong.
Very, very familiar. Correct. Yes.
Yeah, very politically correct, as you know, and so forth. And they completely whitewash the meaning of history. But now, if you do, as I do, because I read Arabic, and I go to the original texts, the original biographies of Muhammad, written by revered Muslim historians from the 8th century and so forth. And in a nutshell, if you look today at what the Islamic State, ISIS, is doing, that is a perfect mirror of what Muhammad did. Muhammad was a terrorist. He was a bandit. And again, this isn't from Western biased Christian sources. I'm reading between the lines of the Arabic sources. And of course, the Arabic sources, they portray him violent, they portray him killing, they portray him doing this and that, but they give it a very pious veneer. That is to say, he's doing all this because he's trying to enforce God's will, God's law. But as non-Muslims, you go beyond that, you read between the lines, and you start seeing, okay, this man empowered himself, grew to strength by essentially saying he's a prophet of God. And it's interesting because if you really go to the earliest phase of Muhammad's career, when he was in Mecca, and all he did, he was weak. He had no power, really. But so he was just a preacher. He was like a prophet from the Old Testament. And after about a decade, he had about, I think, 40 followers. And that was it. And so when did Islam and when did Muhammad grow strong? It's when he went to Medina and essentially became a tribal chieftain. And that's when he went on the war path with the first battle of Badr. And what did he do? He told his followers, okay, if you die, you're going to go to heaven. And it's a very fleshy heaven. It's a very hedonistic heaven. We can talk about that later. If you don't die, you get to plunder our enemies and take their wealth, take their women, take their children, and enslave them. And that's what he said. That's what he did. He himself personally had concubines and sex slaves and so forth, and so did his followers. And that really is the true story of how Islam grew. And again, I'm saying this based on the earliest Islamic Arabic texts. And then, as you said, if you go to the 7th century, Christianity has been around now for about 600 years. And if you take all the territory that made up Christendom, two-thirds, like you pointed out, was actually annexed and conquered and Islamized by the sword of jihad. In fact, in just the first century, many people aren't aware of the fact that countries like Syria and Egypt and, of course, Turkey, these were actually the heart of the Christian world back in the 7th century. Four of the five original sees founded by the apostles are actually today under Islamic rule. And that includes Alexandria, Egypt, Antioch, Syria, Jerusalem, and of course, Constantinople. And so it's always interesting to me when I talk to people and they just somehow think that Islam just happened. It came about and everyone decided to convert. And so speaking of conversion, by the way, it's important to keep in mind that according to early Islamic historical texts, and that's why ISIS, Islamic State, is doing this, the methodology when Muslims and jihadis invade a Christian territory is you give them three choices. You convert, become one of us, or you can be a Christian, but you got to not just pay tax or tribute, which in Arabic is called the jizya, but actually you have to be a third-class citizen. By modern standards, to just be a dhimmi, and it's not just paying taxes, you are actually, I mean, there's Islamic text, Muhammad himself said to belittle and sort of subjugate the non-Muslim Christian and Jew. Quran 9:29 says, fight the people of the book until they pay jizya with submission and feeling subdued and humbled. And so that's what went on. Now, why did people convert? Why is today all of North Africa and Egypt and Syria Muslim majority? And that's another one of those questions that people just don't really discuss. And I think the assumption is, oh, they just like Islam more. In fact, it's because of this system of persecution and subjugation and taxation on Christians that through the centuries, so many Christians who couldn't handle it just converted and became Muslims. And that's really the true story of the founding and the spread of Islam and the begetting of Muslims all around the world. And finally, I know I've talked a lot, but let me just finish this. And what keeps this entire system in place? It's another Islamic law, which is the apostasy law. If you're merely born to a Muslim father, and it doesn't matter what you believe or there's no baptismal rite or anything like this. If your father was a Muslim, you can never leave Islam. If you try to, especially by converting to something like Christianity, your life is forfeit. Muhammad himself said this. It's being taught left and right by Muslim ulama or scholars. And all the time I come across stories where, Muslim families are the ones who actually attack and sometimes kill Muslims because they want to convert to Christianity. So you can see how all this is a system just perpetuated itself, the love of plunder. If I die, I get even more plunder and hedonism in heaven. And then the Christians and others have no choice due to the oppression that they have to face to remain Christians. So they, so many of them through the centuries convert, and then you can never leave the religion like the mafia. If you do, you die.
Raymond Ibrahim, the book Crucified Again, exposing Islam's new war on Christians. When we come back from the break, I want to talk more about some of the mythology that many Christians, certainly people in the West in general, but even Christians are buying into. One of those myths, the myth of the Andalusian paradise. Somehow or other, people have been forced, in a sense, through the constant pounding of a narrative to believe that during the Andalusian, quote-unquote, paradise, when Muslims were in power, Christians and Jews lived in the most extraordinarily wonderful circumstance. Why is the narrative perpetuated? And how can we know it's not true? We'll be right back.
Christians and Muslims can be co-citizens in ethnicity, national identity, culture, and language. But wherever and whenever Muslims are in power, explains Raymond Ibrahim, churches are outlawed, burned, and bombed, while Bibles and crucifixes are confiscated and destroyed. Freedom of speech, to speak positively of Christianity or critically of Islam, is denied, often on pain of death. Read Raymond Ibrahim's book, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. Receive your copy as our thanks when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a donation to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. We'll be back in a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Christians in the Islamic world are vastly outnumbered and politically subjugated under the Islamic way. In Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, Raymond Ibrahim poignantly states one urgent reason why the West in its entirety, Christians and non-Christians, liberals and conservatives, deists and atheists, should take note of and respond to Muslim persecution of Christians. It is a reflection of what Islam has in store for them. Ibrahim explains that if the mainstream media were to report honestly on the persecution of Christians under Islam, the obvious implications that Islam is dangerously hostile to all non-Muslims would be inescapable. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. To receive your copy as our thanks, call 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. www.bibleanswerman.org. Raymond Ibrahim, author of Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, writes, "Christian persecution is perhaps the most obvious example of a phenomenon the mainstream media wants to ignore out of existence, Islamic supremacy. Vastly outnumbered and politically marginalized, Christians in the Islamic world simply wish to worship in peace, and yet they are still hounded and attacked. Their churches are burned and destroyed, their children are kidnapped, raped, and enslaved. It's time to wake up." Read Crucified Again by Raymond Ibrahim. To receive your copy as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online at equip.org. Now, here's CRI President Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And we're talking to Raymond Ibrahim. He is the author of Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. Available for your support all this month. Check it out on the web at equip.org or simply write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And as always, our resource consultants are standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. We hear over and over again, Raymond, that Islam has a proud tradition of tolerance. You have the president, you have assorted professors, you have pundits. They seem hell-bent on presenting Islamic jihad as mental and not martial, and go as far as to recast Andalusia as a paradise in which Muslims lived in peaceful and tolerant harmony alongside Christians and Jews. And that narrative is no longer the stuff of ivory tower elites. It's now filtered down throughout all levels of society. And the truth of the matter, as I'm sure you well know, is that this was one of the most hellish epics imaginable, particularly for Christians.
It's absolutely one of the most hellish epics. In fact, here in the West, when we think of conflicts between Muslims and Christians, we often think of the Crusades. In fact, what's called as the Spanish Reconquista, or Reconquest, when the Christians tried to take back their country from Muslim invasion, the amount of battles and bloodshed just in those centuries, because it actually went over several courses of centuries, far eclipsed the Crusades. And yet we don't know much about it. And like you said, instead, we hear about this sort of, this paradigm, Spanish paradigm of wonderful tolerance thanks to Muslim rule and so forth. And the reason the story is subsequently the media, politicians, and so forth, remained strong and rebellious and were a force, especially up in the north. And so some of the peace, if not most of it, was actually truces between the two, because the Muslims knew that they don't want to provoke the Christians, because then it would lead to more warfare and rebellion amongst the other Christians. That's just for starters. And then there's many other, the Spirit of Spain, and there's a new book that actually came out which completely shatters this. And in my memory, it may not be correct, but I think it's written by a professor, and it's called The Myth of Andalusia. And I've perused it, and I need to read it more, but he just brings all the evidence forth to show how this whole idea is just nonsense. And if anything, it not only is not true, it's the exact opposite of reality. But as usual, whoever it is that tries to foster this idea of Islamic tolerance and so forth, they scour the whole of Islamic history, find the 1% out of 99% of violence, and then they build histories atop that 1%, even though that 1% itself, like I said, is even taken out of context. It's not peaceful just because Muslims want it to be peaceful, but for other more practical reasons. And then they ignore, there's two particularly devastating invasions after the first invasion, the year right around 717, by Muslims when they crossed into Spain. After that, this whole era is supposed to be about 150 years. And then the next 200-300 years, you get some of the most fanatical Muslims ruling in that place. They make ISIS look like Boy Scouts, essentially, and butchers and destroyers. All that you don't hear about because, again, they're just interested in creating a narrative, and this narrative has nothing to do with reality. You told me you're familiar with Karen Armstrong, and I'll just give you one example of the sort of thing that she says. She says that Christians, it was only during the Crusades that Christians started to vilify and condemn Muhammad, the Prophet, and his teachings. And she said they did that in order to basically incite Christians from Europe. So, about 100 years, text Christians, Byzantine, Greeks, Latins, even Bede in Britain, writing in about, I think, in the year 800, who unequivocally condemned Muhammad and call him a false prophet and mock essentially his entire and basically saying what I was saying, because what I was saying is built on what was perceived early centuries, which is that you listen to his follower, he on one hand, you can kill and slaughter everyone who's not part of our tribe, basically the tribe of Islam, and if you die, then you go to heaven and you have 72 basically concubines and so forth, and they just completely, and this has been going on, or they've been writing this, since the initial contact in the 7th century. The Byzantines were saying this about him, so you know, all this history is—it has been completely jettisoned. You'd be surprised to, if you stop for a moment and go through the whole course of Western history at how many influential, important, iconic Western leaders have written so many unflattering things about Islam and Muhammad that would make today's so-called Islamophobia look like child play. And, you know, it's from Thomas Jefferson, Winston Churchill, those are just the modern ones. Thomas Aquinas, you know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but there's essentially, you can write a whole book at all the negative things that were said about Islam. And yet, all of a sudden today, here we are, all that history is gone, Islam is peace, even though on a daily basis we see it prove otherwise. And, you know, that's the sad state of affairs that we're in right now.
You know, you mentioned the word Islamophobia. And it seems to me that the truth exactly is opposite of that, that we have a serious case of Christophobia going on, not only vis-a-vis the soft persecution that's taking place in the West, but the hard persecution that is taking place in Islamic countries throughout the world. So the real issue is Christophobia. And when you look at your book, one of the things that grabs you immediately is the word crucified again. One would think that this is mere hyperbole. This couldn't really be happening. And I suppose that a sleeping church, by and large, in the West thinks it's not. But the truth of the matter is you're not writing crucified again as a sensationalistic moniker, but rather as something that is underpinning a graphic reality that's taking place day by day.
Absolutely. Today, you know, if you think of historical Christian persecution, the ruling of the Roman Empire, you know, Diocletian and so forth, what Christians are experiencing today under the Muslim world, in my opinion, at least by numbers, far exceeds it. They are, as you indicate, literally being crucified again. Are literally, as in olden times, being forced to recant Christ, embrace Islam, and if they don't, sometimes if it's a woman, they get raped and then beheaded or impaled. I mean, stuff that is so beyond barbaric that you can't even begin to imagine or you think belongs in the story past or in some Hollywood movie. All this is happening today to Christians, and as you said, there's this willful blindness out in the West. You know, there was a time when I thought It was honest ignorance, and people weren't mentioning it. People weren't bringing it out. People didn't know. And then lo and behold, this ISIS comes about, and they become the new Roman pagan empire, basically annihilating Christians all around. And the world sees and hears it. Why? Not because Western media is doing their job. They will never do that. But because ISIS itself is the one that likes to videotape and disseminate its massacre of Christians and others and persecution and slaughter. And they're the ones that like to, you know, proclaim their hatred for Christianity and so forth. And yet still, here we are in this atmosphere of denial. And that's why you come to find out it's not so much, at least when it comes to the powers that be and so forth, it's not so much ignorance. They can't claim that anymore. This is willful. This is intentional. They know what's going on. And for whatever reason, and we can try to decipher that, they are essentially allowing it. You know, think for a moment. This Islamic State, which is the most atrocious, barbaric, savage manifestation of Islam in so long, exists precisely in all those spots that the United States went in to bring freedom and democracy. Over a decade ago in Iraq, there was Saddam Hussein, who was, yes, an Arab strongman, but he was a secularist, and his greatest enemies were the Islamists, who he constantly suppressed. And if you look at the at Christians, who were a small minority to start with in Iraq, they had it pretty good under Saddam. They could worship freely and so forth. The United States went in, ousted him in the name of freedom and democracy, and today Iraq is about the absolute worst nation to be a Christian in. The very same year that Saddam was gone, I don't remember how many dozens of churches were set on fire. And basically, the long and short of it is now Christians are maybe 10% the population from what it was in 2004. And where else is ISIS? And now that's where ISIS is, in Iraq. So where else is ISIS? It's where the United States is again trying to get rid of a big, bad, evil dictator, Bashar Assad, a secular, westernized doctor. And again, he's supposed to be this horrible person, and we are supporting quote-unquote freedom fighters, and lo and behold, that's where ISIS is. Libya, remember Gaddafi, again, the U.S. helped get rid of him. That is the other base where the Islamic State is, and that's where they've actually, if you recall, they butchered 21 Christians, Coptic Christians from Egypt. They butchered, I think, 30 Ethiopian Christians and just put them on and videotaped it and showed it. So it's really sad and telling to me that these worst and most violent Islamic manifestations and persecutors of Christians are precisely where the United States has gone in and interfered and done what it's done. And you have to ask yourself, is this absolute ignorance and stupidity, or is it actually something a little more nefarious? And I'm inclined to think the latter as time goes by.
You know, I want to ask you when we come back from the break about the psychosis of a Barack Obama. Obviously, you don't know his heart, but it seems to me a very odd thing that on the one hand, when you hear his speeches, and I've listened to many of them, he uses towering rhetoric to talk about Muhammad or the Quran or Islam and its peace and tolerance and example throughout the ages, and yet he calls himself a Christian. And I've often wondered, why in the world would you want to be a Christian when you have a very demeaning perspective with respect to the teachings of Jesus Christ, to the Sermon on the Mount that he gave, to the Bible in general? For example, he says that the Bible teaches slavery. If it really taught slavery as a core value, that would be a deal breaker for me. But my question that I want you to answer when we come back from the break is, how in the world can someone say, I am a Christian, speak in a degrading way about Christianity, and use soaring rhetoric when it comes to Islam? Now, obviously, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not saying he's a secret Muslim, but I'm just kind of wondering what's going on. Seems very, very strange. Also want to talk about migration without assimilation. It's well described as the python swallowing its prey with a long and slow digestion. We talk a lot about immigration these days. It's on everybody's mind. Want to get your perspective. We're talking to the author of Crucified Again, Raymond Ibrahim. And the book, it's a must-read, available. Check it out on the web at equip.org, and we'll be right back in just a few moments, so please don't touch that dial.
Christians and Muslims can be co-citizens in ethnicity, national identity, culture, and language. But wherever and whenever Muslims are in power, explains Raymond Ibrahim, churches are outlawed, burned, and bombed, while Bibles and crucifixes are confiscated and destroyed. Freedom of speech, to speak positively of Christianity or critically of Islam, is denied, often on pain of death. Read Raymond Ibrahim's book, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. Receive your copy as our thanks when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a donation to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI, or go online at equip.org. We'll be back in a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. Christians in the Islamic world are vastly outnumbered and politically subjugated under the Islamic way. In Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, Raymond Ibrahim poignantly states one urgent reason why the West in its entirety, Christians and non-Christians, liberals and conservatives, deists and atheists, should take note of and respond to Muslim persecution of Christians. It is a reflection of what Islam has in store for them. Ibrahim explains that if the mainstream media were to report honestly on the persecution of Christians under Islam, the obvious implications that Islam is dangerously hostile to all non-Muslims would be inescapable. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. To receive your copy as our thanks, call 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Christians in the Islamic world are vastly outnumbered and politically marginalized. They are subjugated under the Islamic way. Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians by Raymond Ibrahim poignantly states one urgent reason why the West, in its entirety, Christians and non-Christians, liberals and conservatives, deists and atheists, should take note of and respond to Muslim persecution of Christians. It is a reflection of what Islam has in store for them. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. To receive your copy as our thanks, call 888-7000-CRI and make a donation to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. And now, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you much, Randy. I think it was Carl Mueller who said we should think of the American church as a napping church, and that we should elbow that church and wake it up and rouse it to do something about the persecution of Christians. And again, that's precisely why we're offering this book. It is an absolute must read. Let me say that again. It is an absolute must read. You can get your copy for your support on the web at equip.org, or you can simply write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, or you can talk to one of our resource consultants. They're standing by 888-7000 and the letter CRI. In my mind today, the picture I have, said Mohler, is I have a picture of a church in a diabetic coma, a church that's gorged itself on the sweets of affluence, materialism, on the idolatry of worshiping the materialistic world. That diabetic coma is now at a stage whereby it's life-threatening. And we as a church are at the point of death, not the church in the Middle East. We are the ones who can no longer rouse ourselves to even pray for an hour on behalf of things that God would have us pray for. And every now and then, I want to put a book into your hand that will alert you to what's going on. And what's going on is absolutely stunning. You think about the fact that a Christian today is being killed for his faith every 5 minutes. We're talking about this with Raymond Ibrahim. Again, the book Crucified Again, a must read. Check it out on the web at equip.org. You know, before we went to break, I was talking about this psychosis where you have a president, a sitting president of the United States, who seems to be not only ignoring Muslim persecution of Christians, but actually enabling that persecution, and one who speaks with soaring rhetoric when he is talking about Islam, and in a very depreciating way when he talks about Christianity. What's up with that?
Well, you know, when you look at Barack Hussein Obama, and you study his life, I mean, there's some facts that most people don't, acknowledge, and they're not. These aren't conspiracy theories. What I'm going to say right now. First of all, as you know, his father was a Muslim. So, if you recall, I said in Islamic law or Sharia, if your father is a Muslim, in the eyes of Islam, you're a Muslim. So in the eyes of Muslims, and Obama knows this, he is considered a Muslim. Okay. Number two, he grew up in Indonesia, and he actually attended the madrasas, basically Islamic schools. These are the schools where you've seen the pictures of little boys sit and they just keep reciting the Quran by rote and banging their heads and becoming indoctrinated. He went to that, okay? And there's his ID or something from Indonesia, which even has his religion marked, because they do that. In these countries, they make you mark your religion if you're not a Muslim. And it said he was a Muslim, and his name is Islamic. Barack is a very famous, if you'll recall, for example, the former Egyptian president, Hosni Mubarak. That's the same root of Barack, and it basically means blessing in Arabic. So it's not just Hussein. His first name is an Islamic name. So does that mean he is a pious, observant follower of Islam? I don't personally think so. But I think his early youth and his experiences have made him immensely sympathetic to Muslims. And then conversely, as an academic who went to Western schools in America and so forth, and Ivy League and all that, he was, of course, further or the Islamic contempt and hate for the Christian white man was further bolstered in academia, because that's where we are always told that the root of all evil is the Christian white male, and he's done all these horrible things and so forth and et cetera, et cetera. So I think those two factors are very fundamental to, the creation and the mindset of Barack Hussein Obama. And as you indicated, the things that he says, he won't even utter. It's amazing. He won't even utter the word Islam or even Islamist, which is something of a euphemism, or Islamism, in connection to what all these jihadis are doing. And it's just amazing, as if they're just regular criminals who have no ideology and they just so happen to be killing everyone. And by the way, that's one of the reasons the media and Obama and the politicians like to downplay the persecution of Christians, because they want to make it look like these are just violent terrorists who kill anyone and everyone. And if someone learns that actually they're pinpointing non-Muslims, including and if not especially Christians, you start realizing, well, there's something ideological and religious about what's going on. So these are all the factors that shape his mindset. And I'd like to say one last thing about something you indicated earlier. You were talking about, you don't believe in conspiracy theories. And I agree with you. One should be careful. But I also believe that you know, if you think, and I don't mean you personally, but anyone who thinks that everything is so transparent, the idea, the flip side of saying conspiracy theory, which the media and everyone uses to silence all debates, is that everything is transparent. And obviously everything's not transparent. You can't imagine that everything's transparent. Look to what we were discussing with how the Islamic State, the most atrocious human rights abusing entity in the 21st century, just so happens to be created in all the places that the supposed human rights advancing most powerful nation, the United States, has been in. So, yeah, there are conspiracy theories, and we shouldn't shy away from that. And I know everyone likes to use that word, that term, to silence and to basically stifle any kind of thinking outside the box. But in my opinion, there's absolutely no way that what the government is doing is really transparent. I mean, they say one thing, but, and you were talking about, you know, Obama and what he says about Christianity, which is very much often denigrating. And, you know, you go back to Christ's teaching, you'll know them by their actions, their deeds. And you see his deeds, you see the deeds of the media, which is constantly suppressing things like the persecution of Christians and, of course, the government and so forth. So there definitely is, you know, for lack of a better word, a conspiracy going on. This isn't just, you know, everything is transparent and there's just some mistake or some misunderstanding. No, a lot of this is intentional, and Christians in America need to prepare for that.
Want to have you follow up on something, and that is the idea, and you alluded to this, the idea that if you talk about the leaders of the Islamic State, you're basically talking about undereducated savages. But you look at Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, he is a brilliant man. He is very, very educated in Sharia law. He's got a PhD. So these people are not savages. They're committed to a particular ideological system.
Excellent point. You know, above and beyond Abu Bakr, okay, let's look at Saudi Arabia. Okay, everyone likes to dismiss its fanaticism by calling them Wahhabis. In fact, Saudis never call themselves Wahhabis. They call themselves pious Muslims. The whole idea of using that term was, again, created in the West to sort of suggest that their Islam is really not real Islam. Actually, these are the people who live on the peninsula where Islam was founded. These are the indigenous Arabs, the speakers of the language of Muhammad and his descendants. And you look to Saudi Arabia, and I challenge you to find me how they're different from the Islamic State. There they kill the apostate. There they won't allow a church to be created. Their Grand Mufti said if ever a church is found, it's to be destroyed. There just recently, 27 Lebanese Christians sitting in a home in their own private residence where they were working there, were celebrating a Christian feast quietly and had Bibles. They got arrested, they got beat, and they got kicked out of the nation of Saudi Arabia. And, you know, it beheads people, it whips people, women are essentially third-class citizens. So I ask you, how is Saudi Arabia different than ISIS? It's not, yet there are good friends and allies and all that. But the greater point that you're saying is, you know, we have these Western leaders and just media talking heads telling us, no, Islam doesn't teach this. And, you know, I mean, it's very obvious they don't know the first thing about Islam. And yet the most educated, well-versed in Islam, theologians and leaders and so-called caliphs beg to differ. And one last example, because I wrote about him recently, is the man who's considered the most influential Muslim in the world is an Egyptian, and he's the top cleric, and his name is Ahmed al-Tayyib in Egypt. And in the West, he's habitually portrayed as a very moderate Muslim, and he's always looking for interfaith dialogue and so forth, because he does promote that when he's actually visiting with Western people, and he visited with Pope Francis and was hugged by him recently. In the Islamic world, in Egypt, when he speaks Arabic, he says every single thing that the Islamic State says. And he's gone so far, he's the head of Al-Azhar, which is the most prestigious Islamic university in the entire world, in Egypt. He's gone so far as to be told many times, can you please denounce ISIS and say they're not even Muslims, by fellow Muslims who don't want any association with ISIS. He wouldn't do that. He could not make himself come to the point to denounce them. And yet he denounces secular Muslims, poets, journalists, and so forth as being apostates left and right, but not ISIS. And so, you know, who are you going to listen to? Are you going to listen to some, you know, talking head on Fox News or CNN or whatever? Or you can actually look at these top leading clerics and very influential people, and they all agree about Islam.
We are talking to Raymond Ibrahim, and I wanted to get to this whole issue of migration without assimilation, which is a huge problem in the EU countries, and it is a problem becoming ever more acute in the U.S. We have a negative birth rate. When you end up having a situation where you lose your native population, you can also lose your identity. A lot that could be said in this regard. We're going to have to leave that for another time. But the book Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, an absolute must read. Robert Spencer said of Raymond Ibrahim, he said that he is one of the few writers on the scene today who has the courage, the knowledge, and the insight to be able to expose not only what is happening to Christians in Muslim lands, but why it is happening. Again, this book is absolutely fantastic. Get your copy today. It's available for your gift. And Raymond, thank you so much for your contribution on the broadcast today. Look forward to having you back next week.
Thank you very much, Hank. I appreciate it, and I'm glad to see that you like the book, and I hope you can learn from it.
And again, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New World, New War on Christians. Easy for me to say. Raymond Ibrahim, of course, the author. You can get your copy on the web at equip.org or simply write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. As always, resource consultant standing by, 888-7000 and the letter CRI. We do what we do because life and truth matters. This is not a show that is meant to be politically correct. It is a show that is meant to teach people discernment skills so that you can discern between wheat and chaff, heat and light, and make a difference while there is yet time. Thanks for your support. We can really use it. God bless you and look forward to seeing you next time with more of the show.
Thank you for joining us today. One reason why the mainstream media is reticent to report objectively on Christian persecution under Islam, writes Raymond Ibrahim, is that of all forms of Islamic violence, the abuse of Christians where Muslims are in power has the capacity to completely undermine the liberal narrative that has dominated politics for decades. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. As thanks for your gift in support of the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you Raymond Ibrahim's book, Crucified Again. Just call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. Or just visit online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. Christians in the Islamic world are vastly outnumbered and politically subjugated under the Islamic way. In Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, Raymond Ibrahim poignantly states one urgent reason why the West in its entirety, Christians and non-Christians, liberals and conservatives, deists and atheists, should take note of and respond to Muslim persecution of Christians. It is a reflection of what Islam has in store for them. Ibrahim explains that If the mainstream media were to report honestly on the persecution of Christians under Islam, the obvious implications that Islam is dangerously hostile to all non-Muslims would be inescapable. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. To receive your copy as our thanks, call 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org.